Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Sustainable development, growing greener, comprehensive development plans. International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, or ICLEI, Local Governments for Sustainability, and Agenda 21. Are they tied together and part of a larger plan? In the late 60s, some U.S. geologists developed the limits to growth concept. In a report published by a panel of the National Academy, they promoted the view that the world was running out of resources, food, fuels, and minerals. According to their views, most important metals should have become unavailable before the end of the 20th century. Sound familiar? My guest today is Tom DeWeese. He is one of the nation's leading advocates of individual liberty, free enterprise, private property rights, personal privacy, back-to-basics education, and American sovereignty and independence. He's a native of Ohio. He's been a candidate for the Ohio legislature, served as editor of two newspapers, and has owned several businesses since the age of 23. In 1989, Tom led the only privately funded election observation team to the Panamanian elections. In 2006, Tom was invited to Cambridge University to debate the issue of the United Nations before the Cambridge Union, which is a 200-year-old debating society. Today, Tom serves as founder and president of the American Policy Center and is the editor of the DeWeese Report. Thanks, Tom, for taking time to be with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Give us some more information about the American Policy Center, just what it is and what the goal of the center.
Well, we've been around since about 1986, and our focus is on limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise. We promote constitutional government.
Sounds like you're the first Tea Party organization.
We think so. We've been doing it a long time. I've been an activist since I graduated from high school. It's been 42 years, you know, working on various issues.
So even for that length of time, you've seen a problem as far as with the concept or the United Nations interference with the American sovereignty, really.
Yeah, no question about it.
Yeah.
We've watched as government has steadily grown, getting involved in more and more of our lives. You know, now it's a tsunami of government control.
That's a good way to describe it. Earth Day was April 22nd every year, and I can remember when I was in high school, I think it was probably the first Earth Day. And back then I thought, this is dumb. Just the whole concept. Now, is that related to or linked to sustainable development or Agenda 21? Does Earth Day have any part in that or kind of a shadow of what Agenda 21 is?
Well, it's been a steady march, and you know, you had the environmental movement. What we've found over the years, I mean, the environmental movement started out as people concerned about litter and dirty rivers and dirty air and so forth, and we have addressed those issues. America spent more than $1 trillion doing that, but we've seen that that movement has been definitely usurped by those who are pushing for a global governance, global control. And so what we see now is sustainable development and Agenda 21 are a blueprint for a central control of the economy. They use the environment as the excuse. You know, they needed something to get us to give up our liberties voluntarily, and they came up with environmental Armageddon. Everybody's panicking, oh, we've got to do this to protect the planet, so I can't be selfish to think about what I want to do with my life.
And my property and my whatever. And you see that, well, back to, you know, when I was in high school and probably the first Earth Day, but that whole concept of environmental alarmism has increased on all levels of the public school system. So they're indoctrinating the kids that the world's coming to an end unless we allow the government to control every aspect of our lives. The world's going to come to an end. The world as we know it, the United States as we know it, is going to come to an end.
Absolutely. That is a major part of the curriculum. All this push for community service is really part of all that as well. The behavior modification that goes on in the classrooms, watching Al Gore's film three and four times. You never see, you know, in an education environment, you might show Al Gore's film, but you would also show the alternative. I've got alternatives right here in my office. They don't do that. So it's really part of a political agenda. And
one-sided, very one-sided, the whole indoctrination. Yeah. What indoctrination is.
Yeah, and the whole purpose of it is to turn our children into the perfect global village idiots. Mm-hmm. And that they follow all this stuff without question and very pliable. And the whole curriculum today is towards being global citizens. You know, the environment is, you know, the UN calls it the global commons, where there are no borders, there are no nations, states, there's no national sovereignty. Slowly but surely, we're breaking all that down, and the environment is a major tool in doing that.
So basically, the environmental movement, which, as you've said, the U.S. has spent $1 trillion in cleaning up the rivers, cleaning up the water, all the waterways and the air. We've spent that, so we're in good shape. But yet the environmental movement has basically been taken over by others with a more sinister agenda.
It appears that way. Yeah. And these organizations, the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon Society, and a whole slew of others, work hand in hand inside the United Nations, writing up these treaties, the Biodiversity Treaty, of course, Agenda 21, and a whole bunch more. And you know, then you know they bring these treaties to the forefront, and then they have these big international meetings, and the leaders of every nation come there and sign on to these things, and they become international law.
I've heard of Agenda 21 for several years, and I'll be perfectly honest. I have some friends in the southern part of the state who kept talking about Agenda 21, Agenda 21. I thought, I don't think so. You know, it was hard, but now I definitely know they were on the right track, even though I had questions when they started mentioning it several years ago. But as I've seen more of this stuff happening, and it's been going on around several years, but we see it accelerating under President Obama with the push for green jobs, the push for green energy, I guess is what I don't know if it's called green
alternative
energy.
Alternative energy.
Right. And the whole idea that we're being told that our resources are going to run out, and Agenda 21 is very real. And it, as I have found out, my friends down in the southern part of the state were right on the money. Actually, I think they got their information from you. And so explain to us what Agenda 21 is.
Well, the UN has worked for a number of years on various documents leading towards global governance. And finally, in 1992 at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, they came out with a series of documents all based on the environment. Agenda 21 was the main one, the blueprint for what Al Gore calls a wrenching transformation of society, what he says, away from the horrors of the 20th century industrial revolution. You know, that revolution that gave us indoor plumbing and air conditioning and heating and long lives and all that, the horrible thing that we have to get rid of. Agenda 21, the logo of Agenda 21 really tells you what this is about. It has three connecting circles, each of them marked. One is marked economic prosperity, one is ecological integrity, and the other one is social equity. We call these the three E's. If you look at those three interconnecting circles, you will see they address every aspect of our lives. The ecological integrity is the excuse, the environment. Everything's done under that banner. But social equity is really the major key here to understanding Agenda 21 and sustainable development. Social equity is basically pure socialism. It is redistribution of the wealth. It is, they say it as a, it, well, the term they use a lot is social justice. Mm-hmm. You will hear this in their literature far and wide. Well, Karl Marx was the first person to coin the phrase social justice. And you start looking at what they're talking about, they say it is a social injustice for people to own private property, because private property ownership is a way to building wealth for some, but not for others. So it's a social injustice. Having bosses, people owning businesses, is a social injustice, because some people are merely workers. They say it's a social injustice for a country to have borders, because it stops the natural migration of people. So you begin to see, as you look at all this, Agenda 21 encompasses all the other issues that we fight. If we're fighting illegal immigration, we're fighting the growth of government and taxes, on and on and on. You will find all of them interspersed here into Agenda 21. In fact, if you will Google sustainable medicine, you will find the basics for Obama's health care program. Again, it is a social injustice for us not to have universal health care. What we're saying here is that Agenda 21 is the root of all these other issues that we're fighting, and they have had us fighting individually on these issues, kind of a divide-and-conquer kind of thing, where we weren't making any progress. And what we've been trying to sound the alarm on is that if you don't understand sustainable development and you don't understand the social equity plank of it, you can't win.
So you're saying Obamacare is based on the concept of sustainable medicine, which is an Agenda 21 concept.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, what Agenda 21 comes down to is a weird mixture of socialism, fascism, and corporatism. And you end up, the economic prosperity plank is based on public-private partnerships. These are partnerships between private companies and government. This is right out of Mussolini's playbook of fascism. What you end up here with are government-sanctioned monopolies, where certain corporations are in partnership with government, and they get all kinds of perks and privileges and power, and they can put their competition out of business. They don't care what the customer wants anymore. They care about these partnerships with government where they're getting exclusivity, bailouts, all that stuff. Again, you see the connection.
So what we saw happen with the bailouts, like with GE and such, or General Motors and such, is that part of, or was that just a reaction to our economic problems, or is that something that is, you know, you had the economic problems, the corporations had they were on the verge of bankruptcy, and the government moved in and bailed them out. Was it just the fact of the government taking advantage of a serious situation?
Again, if you look down at the very root of what was happening, particularly with the housing industry, was that you had federal regulations that told banks that they had to make loans.
Right.
It's a social justice plank. You had to make loans to people who didn't have money to
pay
them back. That's part of it. And it most definitely is part of it. So, again, you see all these issues that come together.
Okay, now this, you're saying the Agenda 21 goes back to 1992 in Rio de Janeiro. Did the United States sign on to that?
George H.W. Bush signed on to it, yes, during the summit. And then the next year or so, Bill Clinton came into office. Bill Clinton issued an executive order to create the President's Council on Sustainable Development. The purpose of this was to interpret Agenda 21 into U.S. policy. He ordered every single agency of the federal government to begin to implement sustainable development policies. They found that they could implement about 60% of it without any new legislation and set out to do that. And this has trickled down into the states. The way they've done it is mainly through grants. There hasn't actually been a law issued out of Congress saying you have to implement sustainable development. They've done it through grants programs saying, oh, it's all voluntary. But if you take this money, then it comes with these strict strings attached that you implement it. The states have been steadily passing regulations or laws to their communities saying that you have to do comprehensive development plans for your community. It's required. Virginia has that. I know Maine has it. There are a whole slew of states across the country. I would venture to say almost all of them now have that law. And this has become the weapon to force this policy down into the local level, because as these communities begin to comply with the law and begin to put together comprehensive development plans for their community, they are descended upon by a horde of organizations, green organizations like the Nature Conservancy and the Audubon Society, or a lot of local ones there, the Sierra Club, but also you get organizations pretending to be historic preservation organizations. You get state and federal agencies on air and water controls. You get planning commissions and organizations, the American Planning Association. You get the National Conference of Mayors, the National Association of City Councilmen. All of these organizations are pushing the same agenda on your local officials. And if your local officials should say, no, we don't want to do this, first of all, they're in violation of state law that says they have to. Second of all, this horde of organizations who know the game that's being played will begin to tell everybody in your community that your city councilman or your county commissioners are costing you millions of dollars of your tax money, and the pressure is on, and they're forced to do it.
I know recently Carroll County, the commissioners in Carroll County, I think it was Carroll County, Maryland, threw all their sustainable development stuff out. They closed down the committee or whatever it was that they had, their sustainable development committee or agency. They shut that down. They dismissed the guy who was heading that up. Have they been able to maintain that? Have they been able to stand their ground against the onslaught that you're talking about?
So far they are. They know that they're going to be under massive pressure, particularly from the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what they did, these guys were just elected last November, and they came in as a team. There's five of them, and they were all in agreement. And so the first thing they did was shut down the Sustainable Development Office and let go the manager that had been hired. I think they bought out his contract.
Mm-hmm.
He has now become one of their major opponents.
Oh, probably.
So he's yelling bloody murder mm-hmm. over it. The second thing they did was end the city's contract with ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. We can talk about that in a minute.
Oh, is that how? Okay, that's how you pronounce it. Okay.
Yeah, ICLEI. And then, I was privileged to be in Commissioner Richard Rothschild's office a couple months ago, where he showed me the videotape of their first meeting with the Planning Commission. This was something to behold. The Planning Commission, they're used to commissioners who are going along, they're all
mm-hmm.
talking the same language with their wink-winks, you know what
mm-hmm,
we're doing
right.
here. And they're going along, and of course this was written by ICLEI, and suddenly Richard Rothschild said, they're talking about an area where they're redeveloping it so they can bring in business. And he said, well, what about the property rights? And they just stopped and looked at him and said, what property rights?
Mm.
He said, there are people with homes in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it our responsibility to uphold the contract with them that they had when they bought that property? In other words, protect their private property rights? And he said, well, we have to do this. This is the only way to bring in business mm-hmm. into the community. And
following the script.
Yeah, exactly. And a little bit later, Richard brought up the Constitution. And it was like, stopped him again.
Yeah.
At the end of this meeting, the county commissioners rejected this plan. They said, go back to the drawing board and do not come back to us until you have plans in there to protect private property rights and that it does not violate the Constitution.
Wow, what novel ideas.
Yeah. And that's where it stands today. Yeah.
So I have a question for you. It was a June 10th, 2010 Harrisburg Patriot News article. It reported a milestone was observed in Lebanon County Thursday as the Pennsylvania Agricultural Land Preservation Board noted the 4,000th farm in the state was preserved for agricultural use. Pennsylvania leads the nation in preserved farmland. Pennsylvania Farmland Preservation Program has preserved 436,769 acres on 4,016 farms. Farm conservation easements are purchased from farmers to ensure the land stays in agricultural use. Is that part of Agenda 21?
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is probably one of the most sinister ways to lock away the land. You know, I've never met a farmer in my life who didn't want to stay on his farm.
Mm-hmm.
They want a farm. They want, you know, usually it's family tradition going back
yeah.
generations.
Yeah.
They want to be there. They're proud of it. The international economy, the way things are set up now with programs like NAFTA and GATT, the North American Free Trade Agreement, these things have made it so American farmers have a very difficult time competing in the market.
Right.
And so they're in trouble. And you've got a farmer who has an asset, it's his land. And he owes his
mm-hmm.
family, he owes himself
right.
to do something with it. And if they can't make a living on the farm, they think, well, maybe we can sell it to a developer or
mm-hmm.
something, and we can at least live ourselves. Of course, these guys, sustainablists, absolutely do not want that land developed in any way, shape, or form, and they descend upon them, and they talk about these conservation easements. They talk about giving them money or giving them tax breaks, you know, various things. There are all kinds of different conservation easements, and then they also talk about buying their development rights. Well, now you put money into the pocket of the farmer, and all he can stay there. However, what he doesn't understand is what he has just done is signed a contract saying that he will farm according to their dictates, i.e. using sustainable farming practices, which means that he will be restricted on what kind of chemicals he can
mm-hmm.
use, restricted on how much energy he can use in, you know, like using his tractor and things like that, water use, on and on and on, which makes it very difficult for him to grow crops on. It makes it much more expensive.
And I didn't mean to interrupt with that. Can his family inherit it after he passes away, or is it out of the family's hands altogether?
They can, but they're stuck with the same restrictions. And with those restrictions on there, what he can't do is sell it, because nobody will buy it with all those restrictions on it. Eventually, what has happened in most of these easements is that the land reverts to the environmental organization that holds the easement. These groups take these easements and they pass them back and forth. They've got their own economy going on with this. I know right here in Virginia, there's the Piedmont Environmental Council. They help, you know, and when they help get a farmer to sign on to an easement, they get a commission for it. And the easements aren't forever in many cases, so in this particular example, they're like 8 years. Well, guess what? After 8 years, the Piedmont Environmental Council goes back into
mm-hmm.
the farmer and gets them to re-up again. They get another commission.
Yeah.
They're working an account.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you mentioned ICLEI a few minutes ago. I just want to go down through the list of ICLEI members here in Pennsylvania. It's Allegheny County, Cranberry Township, that being Butler County, East Whiteland Township, Falls Township, Haverford, that's in Delaware County, Lower Southampton, Meadville, Crawford County, Middletown, Montgomery Township, Mount Lebanon, Narberth, Nether Providence, Penn Hills, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Warwick Township, Westchester. Most of those aren't in the southeastern PA, but they're actually all across the state. Now, just what is ICLEI?
ICLEI is, as I said before, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. It's interesting that they changed their name to just be ICLEI for local community development. They took out the international word.
Mm-hmm.
But ICLEI is an international organization that helped write Agenda 21, and they made it their mission then to implement it in local communities. And they get paid dues for this by the communities to come in, and they bring a whole program with them. They have software programs for the community to set their goals, to cut their carbon footprint. They have experts that descend on them. They have conferences. They have workshops. They have newsletters. They have a toolkit that they bring in with all the resources that they need, manuals, all that sort of thing, training mm-hmm. workshops for the staff and for the elected officials, and of course, they come in with the money. They know where the grants are, and they know how to apply for them and bring all that in. They bring a complete package in. There are 600 communities in America right now that are paying dues to ICLEI. Their goal is 1,000 by 2015. There's 1,200 communities around the world that they're working in. Of course, their mantra for all this is global warming, climate change, and we've got to cut our carbon footprint back to protect us from, stop global warming.
Right. Stop the destruction of the world.
Yes.
So what we've seen now on the national level, more of it since Barack Obama's been in office, and of course, actually, that's not true. Go back to Al Gore and the global warming thing. Been accelerated, though, under Obama. But you're saying this has actually been taking place on the local level, especially in these that is here in Pennsylvania, in these municipalities I just mentioned, especially in those municipalities, the concept of global warming or the agenda has been taking place through sustainable development and farm preservation or things like that. That's already taking place.
Oh, yeah, it's taking place in almost every single community in the country, particularly through these comprehensive development plans that are set up to the idea is we're going to cut back on the community's carbon footprint. And how do you do that? I mean, you start talking about how that's done. Energy use, water use, and property control of development is the way that's done. And the way you control development is just a massive number. It's a matrix of how this is done. They talk about wetlands. They talk about historic preservation. Historic preservation is one of the ways that they suck in conservatives on this, because conservatives love their history. They love the history of our country. So that's a hot button, to preserve what has happened before. But they don't understand that the kind of historic preservation these guys are talking about isn't what they're talking about.
Right.
If you want to preserve where something historic took place, a birthplace of a president or a battlefield or something like that, in most cases, there are some battlefields that didn't get preserved, but in 90% of the cases, the major battlefields have been already preserved.
Mm-hmm.
What they're talking about here in historic preservation is, there are downtowns now that have historic preservation where absolutely nothing historic happened there. It's just old.
Right.
And, that's not history, but there's grants available there. And once you take those grants, then they start to dictate to you what you can do downtown. I'll give an example here how this affects people. Here in Warrenton, there's a church, an old church down the street, that needed to replace their steeple. And they had found some cheaper materials to use to replace that steeple that they could afford. The Historic Preservation Society of Warrenton said, no, you have to replace that steeple with exactly the same materials that it was built with in the first place. It has to be all of these regulations, which cost them about five times as much, and they forced them to do it. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about here, where it has absolutely nothing to do with it. And some of the people in the area found that, as you mentioned before, their ability to pass their home down to their children was going to become a near impossibility.
Yeah.
So all these kind of things are happening. It's this matrix. And you get into cutting back on energy use. The thing that is happening now in community after community is what they call energy audits. They're coming into your home, and they're auditing your home. And they're finding where energy is being used or what you can do to cut back on it. This may include putting a new roof in, putting new windows in, new energy-efficient appliances, this sort of thing. What they do is a community sets a goal, and that goal literally becomes law. We have to, you know, eventually. They always say it's voluntary. All the way through, they'll say it's voluntary.
Right.
But in the end, you can't defy it. So you have to comply with this. Oakland, California did this. They figured the average cost per home to comply to these energy regulations was $35,000.
The average.
For these things.
Oh,
the
my gosh.
Average. And, you know, if you don't comply, you could be fined.
Mm-hmm.
You probably can't sell your home until it's in
right.
compliance.
Right.
So that's how they make you do it.
Yeah.
But it's all voluntary, you understand.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If folks wanted to contact you, how could they best do that?
The American Policy Center, our website is AmericanPolicy.org, which is the best way.
Definitely encourage your listeners to go check that website out, because there's just tons and tons of great information on sustainable development, Agenda 21, the whole concept of that. So I encourage folks to go to AmericanPolicy.org, get up to date, because if it's not in your community yet, it's coming. It's coming quickly. So thanks, Tom, for being with us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
All right, we will.
Okay, take care.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in defending traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA at Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, 16323, or visit their website at afafpa.org. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of American Family Radio, Lighthouse Ministries of Franklin, AFA, and AFAFPA.